if you don't have enough pens, we have Namus pens right outside the door, so we'll help your budgets also. Before I get started, I'd like to thank everybody in here for filling out the survey that we did. And we're in the draft phase of the first report to go into NIJ. As in all things, no good deed goes unpunished. I think the reason we got the work is we're really good naggers. We kind of call everybody up, and it's kind of the same as Kevin was saying. You know, you have to work together to get this data, and I think we've been doing it for a long time. Those of you that are old, like Greg in the room, remember that we did workload surveys for ASCLAD years and years and years ago, and they kind of dropped those, and now we're doing all different kinds of data collection. But I would like to thank everybody, because it's not easy. If you look at what Greg had to do to get the data that he was required because it was driven, those are some of the same questions people in your agencies ask you every day. And it's not just about one type of evidence. It's about all types of evidence. And as we go through here, I'm going to talk to you in generalities about the study we did, because it is not final. It's preliminary. I'm also going to apply a personal story at the end and really kind of try to tell a story. I think we do a really good job. We have numbers. We have charts. We have slides up there with lots of things that people can't read. But it's very difficult for people that aren't in the laboratory on a day-to-day basis to make some understanding of that information. They think it should just be done. Greg made a good point. I think Kevin made a good point. When you take a measurement at one point in time, it's kind of like the wood pile. You think if you take pieces of wood out, it goes away at some point in time. Where our wood pile just keeps getting bigger and bigger, or it changes because of things that happen. So it is something that's important to remember. So what's the issue? We know that there's been tons and tons of public attention on the funding that's been provided to the DNA backlog. I think, Mark, you said somebody called you and wanted to know why it wasn't done. Well, there's lots of reasons for that. And we also have to look at what are the future demands, not just in one section, but all the sections. If you look at what Kevin put up there, it looks like we're already 50% in the hole in capacity across the board for different types of analysis. The considerable attention we've paid to this, it's been great. However, there's still evidence awaiting and having delays. And I mean, following up Greg, I can't say it any better than he did. He's actually got the numbers. He's in the trenches, and he's actually in the freezer in the parka, it looks like. Why does this backlog exist when we have put capacity to it? It's because it's always changing. There are resource implications, new technology, new rules, new laws, new collection types. And really, the programs that have been developed have tried to look at the DNA backlog and try to make efficiencies and enhance capacity. But as that's gone on, the desire, the need, and the request for analysis continues to increase. The study, we did this at the same time that RTI did theirs for the law enforcement evidence. It's to provide an update on the nature and extent of backlogs in the nation's publicly funded state and local crime laboratories providing DNA analysis. I was fortunate enough to work with the BJS studies in 2002 and 2005, or as many of you know, I called you until you filled it out. And we really did the same thing here. We're really trying to provide information not on just the size of the backlog, but also what are the levels of demand? Is the capacity truly there that we think is there? And what's the reliance on funding, and in this case, federal funding? I think I've not seen anybody present it as well as Greg just did as far as what resources have been put in from the general funds to the federal funds, and I think in a novel approach, the donations. That's actually pretty amazing. And this is still a work in progress. As with all OJP reports, it must undergo peer review. Once the peer review is final, the report will be delivered to NIJ. What was the methodology? We actually went and looked at all publicly funded crime laboratories, and the laboratories accredited by ASCLAD Lab and Forensic Quality Services International. The same ones surveyed through the BJA Census of Publicly Funded Crime Labs in 2005. And the final pool of respondents was limited to those laboratories that were accredited and operating DNA analysis programs at the time. We did not look at any federal laboratories or military laboratories providing DNA analysis just to make sure there was no confusion of what we were talking about. The survey itself was an online form, which we really thought was a good tool. We tried to make it as easy to fill out as possible, but also hoping that the questions would be answerable by the data systems that everybody collects their data in. That's not easy. It's a question is not always answered the same way. We don't define backlogs the same way. We don't define DNA cases the same way. We don't define forensic biology / serology screening cases the same way. And as I go forward, we'll talk a little bit about that. We did follow-up communication with the key people in there and did a standard typical survey model. Response rate, I have to say this, each laboratory was asked to fill out the survey individually. However, for many cases, the state lab headquarter laboratory filled out one for the combined state system. Every state laboratory provided a response, and a large percentage of local laboratories responded. We were very pleased with the response. It does take time, though. People are like, how come it takes so long to do a survey? Well, when you ask people and you give them a deadline and the deadline slides and you call them again, that happens. And you have to provide data analysis and you have to really do a job that nobody really wants to do because it's just another extra task on your plate. What are the outcomes? Backlogs still exist. That was no surprise. The varying definition of backlogs is troubling. I think Greg just did a great job in explaining how their backlog definition changed. Because it really was those cases that had no report. It wasn't all the cases that most people have. Sometimes you provide services for folks that don't know where their case is. They think they've sent it to the lab. It may not have been sent to the lab. There's some real issues there. Demand and capacity. I think this is really interesting. The preliminary data shows that almost a doubling of DNA requests between 2005 and 2007. Now that is actually going along with what Greg said, and not only that, with a low crime rate, your requests are actually increasing. Output has increased to meet the demand at the time, but not to reduce the backlog. So if you look at that, the expansion of programs and things are working, it's just that the benchmark keeps changing. And demand for DNA analysis continues to outpace the available capacity. Again, a lot of this is intuitive information. We had to do it with statistics, but I'm not a stats guy. It's pretty simple. If you can only do X number and you get Y, there's going to be a backlog. And the federal funding. Laboratories reported there would be an increase in backlog cases if federal funding was not available. I think that that's a fair statement. I think Greg would have been in the whole $2 million, even though with his $1 million worth of donations. And a large percent of the funding actually was going towards training and equipment. Training has increased greatly. I hate to use Greg as an example, but he had the data just up there. When you add that many people, you got to train them, and the number's going to increase. So 20 more for next year has another impact on getting more cases out the door as you're doing the training. The story behind the backlog. I think you have to put these things in proper context. Forensic science in general lacks the capacity to perform cases as they arrive at the lab. Kevin said that the law enforcement agencies had well over 50% more items that were submitted to the laboratory. It's pretty easy to figure out that the capacity is just not enough to even do what we have, let alone the ones that aren't submitted. Many times they're held for a period of time before they get to the lab, so they immediately become a rush case and a backlog occurs. And so they become backlog. Here's an example. It's been a while since I ran a crime lab, but I can tell you it was, we did controlled substances and fire debris analysis, mainly chemistry, but in 1985, when crack cocaine hit the streets of Pinellas County, Florida, nobody even thought what was going to happen with that. It really blew up overnight. Our lab moved in 1986 to a new building, so it took time away, and we had cases that were on hand being held in the locker. In 87, the lab staff takes other jobs, reducing the staff from 5 to 3. So we actually had almost a 50% decrease in caseworking people. Increase in law enforcement investigations into street dealing of crack cocaine without consulting the laboratory who was going to receive all those samples caused a 6-month case backlog into 1988. Judges in Pinellas County, if you go query the St. Pete Times, you can look at this. They were kicking the people out the door. They said the lab was woefully understaffed and that this was just a terrible, terrible thing. We need to get these cases adjudicated. So we add some resources like everybody else does, hire 4 new analysts, train them, Backlog returns to 30 days. Total time, even being predictive in something as relatively simple as controlled substance analysis, 4 years. That's in one small jurisdiction where the median age is now about 53 years old. Back then it was about 63 years old. And that's still a lot of drain. And when you look at this, you have to put this stuff in proper context. Everybody wants to do every case they possibly can. They want to provide the timely necessary service. At some point in time, the requests outweigh the capacity, and these cases are going to be backlogged. If any of you were in the session earlier, it's actually the NFSTC booth outside the door here, and we have the NAMIS program. And when we talk about looking at other backlogs, we do have a huge backlog of missing and unidentified persons cases. And again, it's one of those where we can get the data, get it in, and it's a capacity thing also. Thanks.